Good morning. I have some new folks here. I don't know what your experience will be with the Hazy Moon. This isn't so much a talking classroom training center. It's that you go to the colleges or some other places. This is actually a practice center. And Buddha Dharma has virtually no value if it isn't practiced. We can make it sort of an intellectual, and you know, certainly intellectuals love to talk about Zen, see, because there's really nothing that they can possibly conclude from their discussions. So it's a wonderful, it's intellectually very satisfying, because it never answers any questions for you. See, Zen, the classic statement of Zen, see, there is no Zen. One of the great teachers said, throughout the whole universe, there are no Zen teachers. And one of the monks sitting in the group was just shocked by this. He said, well, what about folks like you? You're a large congregation, people following. And the old master said, I didn't say there is no Zen. I only said there are no Zen teachers. So what does that mean? When I said that this is a practice center, all of the great masters, and particularly coming from the Shakyamuni down and the Diamond Sutra, marvelous sutra, the Heart Sutra, marvelous, this whole series, very simple, what Buddhism is about. It's very simple. Buddhism is the study of the self. It's not to try to study something outside of the self. And with the egocentric mind, that's exactly what we want to do. We want to be entertained. Let me sit in a group where I don't have to deal with myself. That's the most difficult thing. I don't want to have to look at myself. I don't want to explore myself and to see what is it that I am. There's sort of a note of sadness for me. I don't know if some of you were looking at some of the blogs on the internet and some of the news. Did you see where Mother Teresa's personal letters have been released? And I just briefly glanced at it. But lo and behold, here is a woman who will be canonized, who is an amazing saint, and she confesses to her fear and her doubt, and that she could only see sort of a cold, black nothingness. See, and for her, what kind of agony it must have been, than to sort of watch the spin that's being done. Now, Mother Teresa is an absolute saint. My teacher would always refer to her as a bodhisattva. I had once made the comment here that Mother Teresa only saw God. I met one of her sisters, Mercy, and when I was in New York. And I've told you the story of Mother Teresa, how the businessmen were negotiating with her to give her some additional property, which she didn't particularly like because they were just trying to dump it and make something for themselves, see. But while in the course of the conversation, they looked around to get a response from her, and she wasn't there. And they looked over, and against the wall, they'd brought a man in off the street, see, who was dying of dysentery, running sores, filth, see, disgusting. He had been picked up off the street. And most of you are young enough, well, all of us, you're going to see more and more and more of this right here in Los Angeles, because one of the work I did with the University of Chicago many years ago, what they predicted for L.A., the social scientists, what they predicted for L.A., and I forget now the year, 2012 or 2015, 2020, I forget. They said, if you want to know what Los Angeles is going to become, go to Calcutta, the worst slums in the world. I was at Beverly Hills yesterday, and now the people, the homeless, are on the streets in the city of Beverly Hills, right in the heart, see, of the business district. They're begging, and they're shopping carts. This will become the biggest slums. And do you know what filthy, disgusting, you go down here one block, see, and it will turn people back, but they're sleeping on the street. It looks disgusting and filthy. Can you imagine picking somebody up off the street like that, bringing them in, And this is a person that can no longer clean themselves. Do you know what hell that person is in? See, and they looked over, and there was Mother Teresa, little old woman. I always think about the way Roshi described his own mother when she was in the room with us. She's sitting over there, didn't understand English, and she's a little old thing sitting there. And he says, "She's ugly, but I love her." See, was just, but the way he said it, see, those were the most loving words. This was Mother Teresa, little ugly woman, on her knees with a pan of water, and was beginning to bathe this person, to clean this person up. Now, if you can all empathize where that person is, see, can you imagine what it must have been like? See, for some of you, this makes you uncomfortable. This is a bullshit kind of talk. But that's because you live in a bullshit world. See, your world is bullshit. And if you don't see the pain and the suffering that Buddha talked about. I read, I was looking through a book, a contemporary professor in religion talking about how negative Buddha Dharma is, and Nirvana, it's just a snuff out nothing. So what a depressing. No. This again, as most of the scholars outside of the realm of Buddha Dharma, they don't get Buddha Dharma. What Buddha talked about is samsara, and samsara is absolutely depressing. That's where this man was, in the world of samsara. And if you don't get it, see, if you don't get that you're going to get old, you're going to get sick, you're going to be disgusting as you die, that's samsara. See, and if you understand the precepts, the 10 grave precepts of stealing, of lying, of killing. See, the 10 grave precepts simply describe the world of samsara, your world, your world. See, and if you experience your world as you sit there right now, if you experience yourself as separate from this room, from the folks in here, from the jays, from the squirrels, if you experience yourself as separate from that, you're in delusion, you're in samsara. And you're in big trouble. And where you live is a burning house, the parable of the house on fire. As long as you live in the discriminating, dualistic, egocentric mind, you're caught in the illusion. See, the illusion. See, and we take the illusion, this illusory body that we can see, and we take this, see, as reality. And in this, there is always, ultimately, the best that you have to look forward to is getting old. And let me tell you, I'm 71, you get here in a hurry. See, I don't know where, it just zip, was like running downhill, no problem at all. I got here with no strain. And if you're lucky, you also get here with no strain. And if you're even luckier, you'll hear the Dharma. See, so Mother Teresa, when she looked at this man, see, she saw God. She says in one of her letters that when she looks around, all she sees is Jesus. See, but where was the doubt? Where was the doubt? Why, see, did she have a crisis of faith? There'll be spins on it. See, but so long as you look for something outside of yourself, what my teacher would have said. See, and he did say many times toward the end of his life, no worry for Mother Teresa, because she's safely in the hands of the Buddha. See, now again, if you're caught in your intellect, you'll say, oh my God, she was a Catholic nun, and he's talking about Buddha. Do you know what Buddha is? See, Buddha simply means enlightened. It's not a deity. See, this is what you are if you can wake up. If you don't wake up, see, we live like this man. See, defecating on ourselves. Oh, Nyogen's disgusting. Is it? Or what are we doing in the Middle East right now? See, how many in here of you are suffering, see, because of what's going on there? Unless you've lost a loved one. See, look what we're doing to ourselves. We're constantly doing ourselves. I was once was watching one of the animal anthropologists. I don't know what he was called. He did it. He was studying the great forest gorillas, and he said the way you can tell when a species is beginning to go extinct is when they foul their own nests, when they foul where they sleep. And isn't that what we're doing? See, with all of our advances in modern technology, what have we done for the air? What have we done for the earth? What have we done for the water? See, that's the world of samsara we're talking about. That's where that man was lying, in samsara. And thankfully, there was this wonderful little old ugly lady who would kneel down beside him and bathe him in one of the great acts of humanity. She wasn't concerned with her image. Yes, she's short and she's ugly. Should she be bothered by that? We should all be so lucky. And Mother Teresa doesn't have to worry. She is safely, see, in the hands of the Buddha. She is safely in this enlightened mind. That's all that means. What Buddha taught was a way out of samsara. And it's not by rejecting, pushing away. It's not by going up into the mountains in a cave. That's an aberration. We do go in retreat. Why do we go into retreat? We don't go into retreat to develop our Buddha nature. Our Buddha nature is functioning perfectly. We go to retreat. You sit on this cushion because you're neurotic. And some of us are psychotic. See? That's the truth. See? You sit because of your neuroses. We're trying to break free from the dualistic mind. See? We're trying to enter into this great Buddha mind, this great enlightened mind. So long, and the old masters will tell you this over and over and over again, so long as you think there's out there something that you can attain, you will spin in futility forever. Now the great masters have said, turn the light inward. See, take the backward step and find out for the first time what it truly means to live in the unfettered mind. See, free from the fear and the anger, the poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance. See, if you search out there, if you do meritorious deeds, Thursday night we talked about it. You can perform all of the meritorious deeds that you want, but it won't bring you to enlightenment. You have to cut the root, see, of this dualistic mind, this dualistic thinking, see, to experience your true nature, your Buddha mind, Buddha enlightened, your enlightened mind, not an Asian deity. Buddha never said he was a deity. He was a man who simply found the pathway out of the world of samsara. The great Dabai asked Basso, what is the Buddha? Basso answered, this very mind is Buddha. See Mumon's verse, the blue sky and the bright day. Here we have slate gray overcast, but it's a bright day. No more searching around. Turn the light inward. What is the Buddha, you ask? With loot in your pocket, you declare yourself innocent. This is an amazing, beautiful, beautiful. Do you get it? See, you stand here, see, in the midst of the freshest ocean in the world, and you claim you're dying of thirst. See, so long as you stay stuck in the world of samsara, that's the thing going on between your ears, behind your eyes right now. If you can allow that to drop, then it becomes simply this crystal clear mirror awareness. And when that occurs, the change takes place. You cannot conceptualize that. You cannot understand it. It is a state of being. As some of you know, there's a new translation out on the platform Sutra, the Sixth Patriarch in Our Lineage. And it's by Bill Porter. And Bill Porter, for those of you who went to China, you'll know that he's a friend of Andy Ferguson, and they have done quite a bit of research in it. But Bill Porter, I don't write letters thanking people, but I really almost feel like I'd love to thank this guy. First off, he has given us some of the best translations on Bodhidharma, the Heart Sutra, the Diamond Sutra, and now the Platform Sutra. And I'm going to start a series of talks. I don't know, next week is Sesshin. I may wait till the following. And I'll take us through the Platform Sutra. I believe I did that with the Diamond Sutra, didn't I? Yeah, see. And again, Ento, I think she's ordered them. It's really worth having. And my teacher would be just stunned to see me working with, and if you get in any leg pain, move. You can move comfortably here. We don't shout at you. But he would have been surprised to see me talking and somehow or another really deeply appreciating sutras now, because at one point I thought that was an absolute waste of time. And I told him I want only blue collars in. I know the world of suffering. I worked as a crisis supervisor in protective services for children. I came out of a place when I was young of suffering. I worked for 21 years in terrible, terrible suffering. See, I knew a lot about suffering. I didn't need that BS stuff, you know, about golden Buddhas walking around with wings on their back and all that stuff. I wanted it to work in Skid Row with some little one left locked in a closet. See, that's where I wanted Buddha Dharma. I told Roshi, I want blue collar Zen. Yes, yes. Then as I slowly matured in this stupid, thick skull of mine, took me 27 years for him to chip it away. See, as it started to loosen up a little bit, then he would start to say, oh, Nyogen, no, it's not too bad sometimes to read sutras. See, I wouldn't grant that at all. See, but after he's dead, now I can say, yeah, it's not too bad, Roshi. We'll pick us up and we'll move a little bit with it. See, here is a beautiful koan. What is the Buddha? And Basso answered, this very mind is the Buddha. Don't make mistakes about it. See, the great Obaku, who is in this Rinzai lineage, see, the great Obaku, he addresses this in his own teachings. He said, this mind that we're talking about is no mind of conceptual thought. See, this is what we have to break free of. This mind is no mind of conceptual thought, and it is completely detached from form. See, the mind behind your ears, or between your ears, behind, some of it may be behind your ears. The old Zen masters will say, see with your ears, see, and hear with your eyes. See, that mind that's churning, for some of you it's churning right now, it talks to you constantly. See, it's continuously engaging you. That is what has to stop. But it's not by an act of suppression. See, don't think that you force it, you stop it by an act of will. Holding the mind, see, like a rock. Not at all, not at all. That actually works, see, against what we're trying to do, which is to forget the self. And of course, don't worry about that. The self is empty. You can't bring the self out and show it to me, see. But what you can do is show me the movement, see, of molecules, see, in atoms, see, energy moving and flowing. And it is a continuously flowing and moving. See, you're aging as you sit here. Isn't it wonderful? See, and you don't even have to do anything. See, and the stream runs downhill. There's a beautiful story about this Daibai. He was enlightened by these words with the great Basso, see. And from there he went out, see, and retired to a mountain, see, and the mountain was called Shime, and wanted to live the life, see, basically of a hermit, and just continue to refine this most amazing thing that he had experienced about himself. Basso didn't give it to him. Basso acted as the triggering mechanism, but the hard work Daibai had to put in himself. And by the way, for those of you who think that you don't work with words, Daibai, what's the school of Daibai? Daibai could defeat the wordy people, the scholars, the other sect. He could defeat them in debate. And there's a koan to that. What is the school of Daibai? And they say, snow in a silver bowl. If you can see that koan, what an exquisite response. But here, he goes into the mountains. See, and a monks, and by the way, monks did finally come around him, see, and he built quite a following. He's one of the truly, truly marvelous teachers. See, but a monk visited him up there and asked, "How long have you been here?" He said, "I have many times seen the mountains change their tints from green to yellow." How long have you been here? Ask yourself that. How long have you been here? And he said, "Many times. Many lifetimes, many lifetimes, many lifetimes." See, many times I have seen the mountains change their tint. See, okay, if we're here, the monk says, "Where can I find the way down from this mountain?" This is an amazing monk. He's come to see an amazing teacher. How do I find my way down from this still place? And Daibai says, "Follow the stream. Follow the stream. Where is that stream? It opens in front of you. Follow the stream. And it will lead you off this mountain," see, into an amazing world. Daibai composed a poem, "A Dead Tree in a Mountain Recess, Past Many a Spring, and Had No Mind to Change. The woodcutters would ignore it. People found no way to approach it." See, sitting in that very still place. "The lotus leaves of the marsh were enough for clothes, the seeds of the pine trees sufficient for food. Now that they have found out my dwelling place, I want to move further into the hills." Obaku says, "The Buddhas and sentient beings do not differ at all." See, an enlightened being, a Buddha. See, there is no difference with the Buddhas and you. See, no difference at all. He said, if you can only rid yourself of conceptual thought, if you can only rid yourself of conceptual thought. So I was just talking with Qigong and again saying, it is so simple. Of course, it is so simple that you can't believe that. The egocentric mind wants to flutter around like a hummingbird. I want to do a little of this, and when I get bored, I want a little of this, and 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 whew, all of a sudden your life is gone. And the most important, most valuable thing that you have, see, is this life. And if you waste it, you have no guarantee as to when you might come to practice again. Rid yourself of conceptual thought. You will have accomplished everything. Abaka will tell you, the sixth patriarch. The sixth patriarch responds, he's also responding to this. He, and this is from his Platform Sutra, he said, enlightenment is already pure. The thought of it is delusion. See, non-thinking. Do you have the courage? See, for some of the new people, they may not think, well, courage. Unless you have actually sat and tried to free yourself from the egocentric mind, tried to give yourself up from your fantasy world, how difficult it is, how truly, truly difficult it is. We've just finished sitting a 90-day sesshin here. And I could throw that out and you just get laughs, but some of the folks who have sat the full 90 days, how many days did they sit free from the ruminating mind? How many days did they 100% see stand against the flow of egocentric thought? Well, probably they'd say, "Nyogen, let's reduce it, the target down a little bit." How many hours did anyone sit a minute or two in 90 days? See, it is that intense. But my goodness, the reward is so staggering. And again, the sixth patriarch will point out over and over again, it's instantaneous. He said, but if students of the way, oh, well, let me finish with him. Inside delusion is purity. See, you don't throw this away. You don't try to deny where you are as you are. This is a problem. For many of us, we come with a real poor self-image. Self-image. has nothing to do with reality. Oh, yes, I have karma. I'm so tall, I'm so wide, I'm so smart, or lacking in smart, as the case may be with me. See? That's my karma. If I'm caught in the delusional mind, see, in this little bitty mind that can rationalize and give rise to the kind of insanity that turns around me in samsara. See, look at the world at large. Look at the world at large. My God. See, how would you like to be one of the soldiers, those of you with a poor image, whose legs and arms have been blown off, whose face has been blown away and is still alive? You think you've got it tough? And who's doing that to you? The people who are supposed to protect you. The silly posturing, the insanity, see, of samsara. This is what Buddha identified. Samsara is depressing. Buddha Dharma is hallelujah. I can free myself from the constraints. See, so these people who will say, and they'll say to me, Nyogen, I've had people here, remember, oh God, is Nyogen going to talk about all that death and all that stuff? It's depressing. Well, of course it is. That's what samsara is. That's what Buddha figured out. Life is suffering. What life? The delusional life, the dualistic life, the life of separation is suffering. But inside delusion is purity. Once truth removes the three obstructions, see, what are the three obstructions? Greed, anger, and ignorance. Truth. What is truth? This is the manifestation of truth. If you're not caught in, you're discriminating. If you're just sitting here clear, you should simply be hearing. These words, if they have any value, should be just falling on the ground of your mind, just like raindrops. See, if the karma is right, something might sprout up. It's an amazing thing. But you should simply be looking out. You shouldn't be trying to understand it even. You should simply be in the experience of now. If you follow the way in this world, let nothing block your path. Paying attention to your own mistakes. Don't look at the mistakes of others. Don't be caught, see, in the discriminating mind that picks and chooses, says this is right, that's wrong, this is good, that's bad. See, don't be caught. This is the great sixth patriarch. It says just see your own mistakes, your own errors. But now, in his words, there's something very, very subtle. See, if you do this from a dualistic way, and we work it that way at first, but if you're in a dualistic way, see, thinking, oh, I won't see what Sotet's, I mean, I really do, but my God, I have to watch what I'm doing, see. That's not it. See, what he's telling you is you become one. And there are no mistakes to be seen other than my own. And then, the most amazing thing, how I practice the way, is I work to bring harmony, which is the treasure of the Sangha. He said, but if you students of the way do not rid yourself of conceptual thought in a flash, see, this is the beauty, in a flash, even though you strive for eon after eon, you will never accomplish it. So long as you think that there's something out there. By the way, the newer people, by now, you should have been able to pick up on a little bit of this samadhi. See, you're alone in there behind your eyeballs. You don't even know what the person next to you is thinking. You are totally alone. Are you aware of that? You sit in the center of a mandala, a world that turns around you. You are alone there. You don't know what the next person next to you is experiencing. You will never know how I experience that. You will only know what you think I experience. You will always be caught there. Always talking to yourself, only knowing what your experience is, how you see things. And that's the problem. We then project out. See, we push our agenda. well, this is the way I see it. I know what that person is thinking over there. No, you don't. You only know what you're thinking. You're alone in your head. If you can't experience that, if you do experience it, then you've moved quite a ways. See, to understand that you are alone there behind your eyeballs. See, you're living in a world that's separate. And so long as you're experiencing in that in way, then this out here is threatening. You got to be very, very careful, because it might try to take advantage of you. And you have to prepare for any eventual need on your part. So greed comes in because, oh, that world out there is threatening. We have to exploit it. Climbers are going to conquer Mount Everest. Conquer Mount Everest? We got bodies hanging from there like Christmas tree ornaments. Every once in a while, the mountain lets somebody go by. See? See? But you're alone in there. You should see that. You should experience it. And if you can catch that, you're beginning to understand what meditation is. See? Now, keep that awareness. See? Don't slip back into getting lost in it. Be aware of the separation. And once you're aware of that separation, then you can see what the next step, see, is. How do I drop that sense of a separate self in my head? See, the Buddha in the Diamond Sutra says, very simple what Buddhism is. No perception of a subject. You feel yourself in behind your eyeballs. You think you're there. Buddha says, no perception of a subject. Can that be done? Sure. That's why we sit Zazen. And no perception of myself there, no subject. If there's no subject, then there is no perception of an object out here. Wow. Uh-oh, but what does that mean? Like the professor, snuffed out. See, nothing. Buddha warns us, the students, you've got to be careful, because they're going to fear falling into emptiness, falling into the void. That's what the professor did. See? And that's not the case at all. No sense of yourself sitting behind your eyes, and you're not seeing a separate object out here. No subject-object relationship. Then Buddha gives you the biggest hint. Then he says, perform meritorious deeds. See, what's performing the meritorious deed? Ah, that's what you have to find. If you can find that, then you enter into an amazing realm that's right here, right now. See? The six patriarchs said, people who truly follow the way don't consider the faults of the world. That's separation. Don't look out here and get involved in the judging mind. And if you try to resolve that statement in your head, you can't do that. See, all you do is stay twisting around. See, you have to really take the step from the top of a 100-foot pole. He said, those who consider the wrongs of the world only add to their own. If you sit here and you worry about, oh my God, look at the terrible place of samsara, you're just adding to the baggage in your head. See, you have to take the backward step, as the great Dogen Zenji says. You have to turn the light inward. See, the room that you exist in, that room of separation, is a dark room, and the corners are filled with all sorts of scary junk. See, open the windows. See, allow the light to come in. How do I do that? You can do it very easily, in a flash. Just don't think. Just be. And the light is in there. And literally, it feels that way, see? He said, the sixth patriarch, I don't condemn the faults of others. My own wrongs are what I'm after. And again, to see that at first, see, from a smaller sense of self-perfection, but eventually begin to see it from the big eye, see, from the mind of Buddha, so that there are only my faults to be corrected. What an amazing thing. He said, just get rid of thoughts about wrongs and all of your afflictions will be shattered. See, drop the ruminating mind. The third patriarch said, the supreme way knows no difficulty. It simply dislikes picking and choosing. That's what's going on behind your eyeballs. Don't you see that picking and choosing mind? See, now just become clear. See, and the Zazen, this is the way, see, that we work to lead ourselves out, see, of habitual thought, of habitual patterns. That's the whole point. We are addicted, see, to this ruminating mind. See, we're constantly pursuing pictures of things that are not real. Everything going on behind your eyeballs right now, it's unreal. The old Zen masters will talk. It's like being hungry. And you see a picture of a rice cake. Does it satisfy your hunger? See, will the gnawing fear, the anxiety, the anger, the wanting it to be in a different way? Does all of your ruminating thought eliminate that? Obaku said, if you're immersed in the meritorious practices of the three vehicles, you will be unable to attain enlightenment. He said, but didn't Buddha just say, perform meritorious? Yes, but Obaku is saying, if you think just going around and setting up good deeds, see, is going to bring you to enlightenment, it's not going to. We have great charitable organizations, great caring, great giving, and yet there is great misery associated with that. That alone. See, it's better to do that than do nothing. See? But you have to drop the perception of a subject. See, and when that's done, then you truly can perform meritorious deeds. He goes on to say, nevertheless, the realization of one mind may come after a shorter period or a longer period. There are those who, upon hearing this teaching, rid themselves of conceptual thought in a flash. Be here and stay here. What is this here? It's the now. See, and right now, you can experience the now. And what can we say about this now? We can say it's the mind of awareness. You heard the squirrel raising hell with something. See? You can hear the cars. You can hear the creaks in the old house. See, you're aware. You can feel your back, your legs. You're aware. And when are you aware? Right now. This now, this state of awakeness, never ends. It never, ever ends. See, and this is what you have to allow yourself to move into, to go into. This state of awareness is here. It's not out there waiting for you. You're not going to find it in the mountains of Tibet. You're not going to find it someplace else. Wherever you stand, that's where it is. Just wake up. See, this is what Bodhidharma came from the West, pointing to the mind of the practitioners, not caught in the words and the phrases. This now. Now stay awake in it. That's the difficult part. See, because all of a sudden your egocentric mind will jump up and it'll say, well, I want to feel an enlightened state. Well, you've already lost it. You have to totally cut the root. You have to be daring. You have to go into what, my God, is a risky place. Do you also see the amazing part of this? You can't leave the now. See, that's what Roshi meant with. See, and we could have said, you don't have to worry. You're safely in the hands of the Buddha, this enlightened mind. You cannot leave the now. For those of you who have never heard this talk before, see, as you leave here, see if you can leave the now. And see if the now isn't always here. Wherever you stand, it's always here, and it's always now. If you get in that, you're also starting to move into the stream. Or as the old master said, follow the stream downhill. It rolls downhill easily. He goes on to say, though, see, for some of us, see, we have to go through a lot of practice. There are those who are quick, and they see it in an instant, and it's not enough just to see it. You have to apply it, you have to practice it. The great Yamada Roshi, the Dharma brother of my teacher, and I met Yamada here, and sometime I'll bring out, I have some of his unpublished teachings and we'll talk about those. See, he said to see it, for some of you, you can see it. He said, and that's relatively easy to do. But it's not enough to simply see it. Now you have to manifest, see, as this great enlightened mind. Then you can truly do meritorious deeds. And he said, this takes time. Because the habit energy comes up, we have to snip it. The habit energy comes up, we have to snip it. The habit energy comes up. That means coming back to here. Waking up in the now. Waking up in the now. See, the now is this perfect state of awareness. And it has to be effortless. See, when we first begin to see it, most of us, see, you kind of fight to struggle. We think, well, I got to struggle to stay here. Well, in a way you do, because you want to slip back into the ruminating mind. You want to go blind again. See, oh, what's it going to be like? I'm going to see this really super person tonight, and we're going to be really super hungover tomorrow, and I'm going to wonder, why did I really do that stupid thing again and again and again and again? See, just change the hats on the folks. See, change the names, the place. Same delusional state. See, but the now is eternal. And delusion comes up in the now. The now is the eternal. It is pure. And that's what he says up here, where he says, enlightenment is already pure. What is enlightenment? Enlightenment is this state of now, this pure, non-distracted state of awareness. And it's pure as it is, just as it is. Don't project anything out onto it. He says, but whether they transcend conceptual thought by a longer or a shorter way, the result is a state of being. This is the great Obaku. The result is the state of being. There is no pious practicing and no action, see, of realizing. You know, when we've looked at the precepts, how I've talked about it, the 10 grave precepts, see, in the deluded state, this is the world of samsara, stealing, lying, killing, see, speaking about others' faults, elevating ourselves, speaking ill of the three treasures. What are the three treasures? You're the three treasures. You're the body of the Buddha. You're the realization of the Buddha, and you manifest in this physical form as the Nirmanakaya. You are the enlightened mind of Buddha. What an amazing thing. And to realize that most of us are content to walk around in a deluded state, and we allow this opportunity to awaken, to slip through our fingers. It's this state of being. Once we begin to practice, once we begin to wake up, once we begin to free ourselves from the deluded sense of separation, see, then we transform the 10 grave precepts. This is not like the admonition, do not, although it says don't. It isn't that kind of thing. There isn't something sitting judging. You damn yourself. See, each moment is new. This eternal now, this now, this is where your power is. Stay awake in this, and you take and wipe away all of the transgressions of the past. You are new in this enlightened state, and what you produce from this point on becomes the enlightened state. If you're in hell, it's because you're producing it. See, the great Hongzhu says, to frolic in a samadhi of bliss forever. That's there for you. See? That there is nothing which can be attained is not idle talk. It is the truth. See, it's not away from you. You can't attain it. Why? Because you are it. You are the now. Why do you have a problem with it if you slip up into here? That's why we sit. To break free from that. He said, moreover, whether you accomplish your aim in a single flash of thought or after going through the 10 stages, see, the bodhisattva's progress, the achievement will be the same. Don't worry about it. Instantaneous enlightenment, marvelous. I have to cultivate it, marvelous. All sentient beings are no different, not one iota different from the great Buddhas. It's simply upside down thinking. The sixth patriarch said, false views. See, your deluded head. And if you're right back into your ruminating mind, see, those are false views. And when you project out here and see this is separate, and you judge it as good and bad, right and wrong, those are false views. False views make up the world. True views are the world beyond. What are true views? To simply see it is like a mirror. Most of you, if you've read this pristine crystal mirror awareness, the samadhi of that, see, that's this state, it's non-distracted awareness. See, this is the purified view. See, I won't go into some of the discussions and arguments that people bring up about this. See, it's enough to begin to hear it, that this is all I have to do is look out here. And rest assured, you'll know what to do. You'll know what to do with a precision that you've never experienced before. See? And if you can do it and hold it long enough, see, the basic ground when the ego drops away is fearlessness. No fear. And it's selfless. See, selfless compassion. When true and false are both dismissed, your Buddha nature will be manifest. Just like this. See, if there is an eyelash of difference, Buddha said, it's the difference between daylight and darkness, or delusion and enlightenment. See, some of you walk right to the edge. This is what we sustain. He said, this is simply the straightforward teaching, also known as the great Mahayana. He concludes, delusion lasts countless kalpas. Awareness takes but an instant. Please take care of it.